Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Mike Force podcast. It is, of course, your host, Mike G. Hey, let's talk about our sponsors, guys. Affiliates and sponsors are important to us as a podcast because they support the podcast and are available for you at a discount, which is why the reason we partner up with these guys. We never sponsor or advertise anything that we don't believe in or anything that we haven't personally used and vetted. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. That's H-E-L-P. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Look, a lot of us deal with issues all throughout our lives, and the last people that we address is ourselves, right? We never want to deal with our own issues, and that's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp assesses your needs and matches you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can start doing that within 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's a professional therapist done securely online. It's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available. I've shopped therapists before. It's a pain in the butt, especially when you're just shopping in your own town. You could do this and log in on your account anytime and send a message directly to your therapist. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you'll get scheduled weekly videos or phone sessions so you don't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change therapists if needed. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit their website to see their testimonials at BetterHelp, that's HELP.com/reviews. Also, on this podcast, if you go to BetterHelp.com/MikeForce and use MikeForce as a special offer, again, that's BetterHelp.com/MikeForce and use MikeForce in the special offer, you'll get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/MikeForce. Go get that help you need, guys. Don't be ashamed of that. Talking to somebody, especially a professional, is the best help you can get. Guys, also, I've been training up for this hunt, and I'll talk about Element. If you go to drinkelement.com, that's L-M-N-T, Lima Mike November Tango, /MikeForce, that's drinkelement.com/MikeForce. You'll get a free 8-sample pack of some of the best supplementation in the world. Look, if you eat whole food diet, like if you eat healthy, you're going to need to replenish the sodium that you lose through a crappy diet. I hate to even say it that way, but a lot of people who eat high preservative diets get a lot of sodium. And so if you eat whole foods, you need to replenish that sodium. One of the things that I realized is in special operations, I was using oral rehydration salts, and it was one of the best things that I found. Everybody was sleeping on it. Nobody was using it. And when I was doing my rucks, my runs, all this endurance stuff and living an active lifestyle, it was benefiting me because it was keeping the electrolytes in me. If you just drink water, when I grew up in the Army, if you just drank water, that was the solution for everything. Feeling fatigue, drink water. Not performing well, drink more water. So if you actually look at how you could replenish your electrolytes, you need to supplement. You're not going to get it in that diet. And that's where drinkelement.com/MikeForce comes in. You can get a free 8-sample pack for free. The only thing you got to pay for is the shipping. Look, my favorite is the raspberry salt. Super good. And you can get the 8-pack for free again at drinkelement.com/MikeForce. I'm going to get right into the podcast, guys. I was going to do a podcast on the idea of preparing in chaos, but I kind of wanted to do a current events podcast because of all the things that are going on. By the time you hear this podcast, I probably recorded it the same day or the day prior. So this is relevant because it has to do with your level of preparedness. I want to talk about the week, my early week. I just got back from Nashville, Tennessee. I flew into Nashville and drove up to Clarksville, staged and went to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, because I was invited for the Task Force 160th. Task Force 160th, or SOAR, Special Operations Aviation Regiment, is one of the most elite helicopter units in the world. It's a unit that I'm very familiar with because I used them as a customer many times in my military career. In fact, in 2005, on an operation in Afghanistan, we lost an MH-47, a Chinook, that crash landed, I believe, with the battalion commander from 160th SOAR, Everybody was okay. They were injured. But on exfil of exfilling our sniper reconnaissance element out of the area, we lost a multi-million dollar bird from Task Force 160th. From then on, in the beginning of my career, throughout my entire career, I flew on Little Birds, MH-60s, Black Hawk helicopters, and have had my butt saved by attack helicopter Little Birds in multiple operations. One time I was in Libya with George. We were sitting in the chow hall, and the guy across from me, who was the FBI lead, happened to be a helicopter pilot who flew in Mogadishu, Somalia, and was shot, wasn't shot down, wound up jacking up the bird, and he limped that bird back to base. But he was there on October 3rd in 1993 in Mogadishu, Somalia. I also worked with a Little Bird pilot, an attack helicopter Little Bird pilot, who saved our butts many times in combat operations, and ran into him downrange. It was crazy. So I got to do this tour and went through, saw the helicopters, got to sit in the helicopter, didn't get to ride this time. Already did that in 2007, but got the opportunity to talk to some men from the 160th. Look, these guys are out there every single day doing the job. They're one of the most active units since 2001, since the global war on terror began, who haven't laid down and checked out. They've been involved because the attack helicopters and the transportation platforms that are necessary in war, and I got to talk to some of those men. I met a man who was a officer who winded up leaving the regiment for 8 years, becoming a pastor, was working as a civilian, and then put back on the uniform and still serving there. I met another guy who's a CW4, who's a flight lead for the attack helicopters, who gave me the hat that I'm wearing right now. Six guns don't miss. And, you know, Night Stalkers never quit. This guy has been in it, been with the Night Stalkers for 9 years, and he loves his job, man. The passion he had and has for his job is amazing to see. Also got the opportunity to run into a former 10th Group SIF assaulter, Commanders in Extremist Force assaulter. That was one of my younger guys who winded up leaving to go to flight school and ran into him randomly in the hallway. He's like, Mike? I'm like, what are you doing here? He's like, I'm flying MH-60s for 160th. I'm like, so awesome to see you, man. And I ain't seen him in a decade. And it's so cool to see. Thanks. Big shout out to the PAO, the Public Affairs Office, for allowing me to just experience some time with 160th, seeing their capability. It makes me feel good staying in the community and staying relevant and hearing all the stories, the impactful stories of the men and women still serving. And I want to talk about the current events as it relates to service. You know, a lot of people have asked me on my direct messaging, Mike, how do you feel about Afghanistan? And one, I want to tell you, it's heartbreaking. It is completely and utterly heartbreaking to see what transpired. I kind of want to pull up my, actually, I'll do this. I'll pull up my Twitter feed because early on when this started to unfold, I did a few posts on Twitter because I started seeing things become unglued. So 2 weeks ago, I posted on Twitter a picture of the Taliban raising their Taliban flag and kit and equipment that belonged to the Afghan partnering force of probably the commandos or the partnering unit because their kit's high speed. And I posted that picture and I said, we haven't learned from our mistakes in warfare. 70 years later, we are still in Korea because evil doesn't take breaks or follow the Geneva Convention. And then I put an asterisk and I said, Taliban lifting their flag. And a week ago, I posted a picture that it was a headline. It said, U.S. to evacuate most staff from embassy in Kabul as Taliban sweeps across the country. Now, at this time, the Taliban, town by town, was taken over. And I wrote, sending troops to retreat and not fight is an interesting tactic against a common enemy via the Taliban. 5 days ago, I posted, if you lead this country, you should have to at least serve this country in the military. The interest of a career politician aren't the same interest of the American people. It's time for change. And then 3 days ago, I wrote, as captured Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and Taliban prisoner are released across Afghanistan, our eyes, ears, and security in the region is crumbling to the same organization that harbored Osama bin Laden to plan and execute 9/11. We are learning a lesson in real time. Shame. 3 days ago, I said, where's all the woke now? Women are going to be raped and murdered by the Taliban. Children subjected to abuse and rape. I'm a humanitarian crisis at the hands of our policy. Yeah, I didn't think so. You're only woke when it's pushing your agendas and lining your pockets. And then a day ago, I posted a picture of Americans and South Korean soldiers standing on the demilitarized zone in Korea. And they're on the DMZ, and you could see the North Koreans on one side, and you could see the South Korean and the American soldier on the other side. And I put an arrow pointing at the North Koreans and said, Taliban. I put Afghans on the back of the South Korean and America on the back of the American soldier. And I said how it should have gone down. And I said, I agree with the withdrawal of troops like we've drawn down in Germany, Korea, Italy, Japan, Libya, etc. But leaving no contingent to support the Afghan forces is a mistake. Buy with and through is a long-term strategy that doesn't need an exit. No one wants to hear it, but war keeps the spear sharp and honed. Unplugging from Afghanistan without maintaining assets and capability will be the biggest foreign policy mistake in our lifetime. And I truly believe that. Let me explain why. So if you reference me 3 years ago talking about this, there's actually a podcast 3 years ago where I talk about the withdrawal of troops or the pulling of reducing our numbers in Afghanistan. I agree with that. I don't think that we need to be waging a conventional campaign in Afghanistan. But let me remind you of history. World War II, 1941 to 1945. Korea, 1950 to 1953. Vietnam, 1958 to 1975. When we look at the campaigns that we have fought in all across the world, look at our current presence now. 70 years later, for example, in Korea. I'm half Korean, by the way. My dad was in the army stationed in the early 80s and late 70s on the border of Korea, South Korea, North Korea, on the DMZ. In 1953, we drew a line in the sand and we said, we're not going to cross this line and neither are you. And we started our security campaign, a buy with and through campaign that still exists today. It exists today. We have a security presence right now in South Korea, which is why, by the way, South Korea is in the top five, the ranked number four, in world economies and countries that are doing so well for themselves because of the security that America is able to offer. A lot of people will argue that this isn't an American problem. That's not true. The reason it's an American problem is because if you remember back to 2001, Massoud, who was the head of the Northern Alliance in September 10th of 2001, was executed by the Taliban, by remnants of Al-Qaeda. And the beginning of this war was when 19 terrorists with box cutters hijacked four airplanes and sent them into the World Trade Center, into the Pentagon, and into a field in Pennsylvania, thanks to American citizens who fought back. So if we reflect on that, the reason that is so impactful is because all of the terrorism that brought itself to our country and one of the largest terrorist attacks in our history was because there was a country that was a safe haven for terrorism. Now, I want you to reflect on that and then look at the current policy and the mistakes we're making in real time. I'm glad I'm doing this podcast post the general's interviews that I saw last night, where you had two generals. You had Austin, who's a former general of CENTCOM, who's the Secretary of Defense, and you had one of the Joint Chiefs talk about our strategy, our military strategy. Our military strategy and the exfiltration of American civilians, Afghan partners who fought side by side for a 20-year war, is the biggest military, strategic, political disaster I have ever seen in my lifetime. Look, if there's an argument that we didn't expect the Taliban to move that rapidly, I would buy into that argument because the Taliban, on a timeline, accelerated everybody's expectations. But let's draw it back a little bit and talk about what the expectation of the objective of pulling out was in the first place. The Central Intelligence Agency, including the intelligence community, which includes over 17 organizations, all, from all reports, expected the Taliban to take completely over of the country. When Biden was asked in a press conference leading up to the pull and withdrawal of all forces in Afghanistan, if the Taliban were going to sweep through there, he said it was highly unlikely. So already it's been reported that he misrepresented what his own intelligence community was telling him, which to me is a political disaster. It's a misrepresentation of facts coming from your intelligence community and then what you are doing politically via your executive power and affecting change. That affected change, by the way, has cost Afghan their lives. Developing a safe haven right now in an entire country, and what we're looking at is one of the biggest disasters unfolding, where we have 80,000 people, including up to thousands of American citizens that were trying to pull out by the end of the month. By 31 August is the estimate. So let's back up a little bit. One, I'm a former Special Forces Sergeant Major that has planned evacuations and crisis action plans across the globe. Like, this is not coming from a person who woke up, drank some coffee, and feels virtually woke and has to talk about this. So I understand in context and strategy and tactically how this works. I planned the NEO operation, the evacuation operation of civilians out of Mali. Like, I literally was part of the planning group. I flew to Germany, was tasked to sit down with the Navy, with the Army, and come up with a crisis action plan to evacuate civilians, including the expatriates, the expats that were there on the ground. And so I understand this. I planned the crisis action plan after September 11th of 2012 in Libya when we screwed it up. Right? When I hit the ground, the first thing me and my guys did was did surveys, developed a crisis action plan as the crisis action lead for that country. And by the way, the continent operating as the lead for the crisis action response, being in the Commanders and Extremist Force, an organization that's only job is to be able to react and respond to these kind of scenarios. I also have a degree in Homeland Security and crisis management, and understand how this happens structurally, strategically, and tactically. So with that being said, I'll get off my high horse, but I just wanted to give you the context. With that being said, if there's any excuses from a general, that somehow we didn't see this coming, it is a lie. It is a blunt and overt lie to the American people. Because every single thing that policy drives and intel collection and operation priorities is driven down to the tactical level. A Kirby, who came out, who's a former admiral who represents the White House as a spokesperson for national security, came out and said that the Pentagon in July, a couple months ago, was planning, war planning strategies on how to exfil Americans out. They were doing what's called course of action development. Now, strategically, that's big picture. That's 30,000 feet above the tactical situation on the ground. When you're given the commander's intent strategically, then tactical and combatant commanders, which it starts at the combatant command, which in this case would be CENTCOM, Central Command, they would decentralize the planning processes for certain elements to include Marine fast teams, Commanders in Extremists or Commanders Response Forces, which, by the way, USASOC and their brilliance, U.S. Army Special Operations Command in their brilliance, just destroyed the fabric and integrity of the Commanders in Extremists Force. Mind blown right now. Like, they decided at USASOC that the commanders in extremist force was not needed. And they just destroyed that element and turned them into another type of company because they didn't think it was needed. So now when we look at NEO and crisis response evacuation processes, we don't have a special element there. We might have to call on the National Mission Forces. We might have to call on other organizations. But the entire job of the commanders in extremist force is to be on the ground to react and to respond. So those tactical elements plan the evacuation, and then we pre-stage. We, as a strategy, look, how it starts is you start with a D-Day. So we designate that the specific time that we're going to pull and withdraw all troops is this day. When we get that date, we backwards plan the phases of the operation leading up to that day. But here's what happened, guys. What happened is we decided without an understanding of how this would evolve and contingent, like I heard Kirby talk about contingencies and that, and justifyingly, he said to a reporter who asked about contingencies, you can't plan for everything. What? What? Like on one hand, he says we plan for contingencies, but he says we can't plan for everything. What? So when we do course of action development, we use intelligence and information to make sound decisions in deciding what course of actions are the priority in the hierarchy decision-making. So if we said the Taliban, based on the intelligence community's recommendations, will literally overwhelm this country in a period of time, contingency-based planning in a simple structure of a PACE plan, a primary, an alternate, a contingency and emergency plan, we would establish what's our primary plan. Well, if our primary plan is that we're going to evacuate over a 90-day period, what would our contingency be? Well, the contingency plan would be based off of the Taliban overwhelming the country in 30 days. The contingency in the PACE plan would be, what if the Taliban overwhelms the country in a couple weeks? Well, that's your contingency plan. Primary, alternate contingency, remember in this PACE acronym. And then what's our emergency? What if the Taliban overwhelms the country in a few days? And that's our emergency plan. So now we have four developed courses of actions that we line out, and then we decide that those four courses of actions are going to be serviced and supported. So that way, if we have to enact that, we could react immediately with no lull. So we would say, okay, we're going off the primary plan. The primary plan is a 90-day strategy from D-Day. So we need to strategically pre-stage guys in Kuwait. But how do we react to the emergency plan? Because what happens if this happens overnight? Well, then we would have to pre-stage some kind of exfiltration or infiltration platform to be able to react and respond, to leverage those troops to be able to get on the ground in a period of hours. So then we simply leverage assets. This, by the way, in a decentralized approach called the military decision-making process, is very easy to do. 12 Green Berets can do this in an isolation facility in a matter of hours. So if you're talking a general and the Secretary of Defense and the President of the United States of America saying, oh yeah, yeah, we can't plan for every contingency. This is not how it works. That is a bold-faced lie because that's exactly how it works. So now when we progress and we line out the PACE plan, all the contingencies are in place, then we start the phased approach to meet the objective D-Day timeline, right? Because now we're in phase one. Phase one of this operation should have been the deliberate evacuation of pulling troops out. But here's what we did wrong, guys. We announced the date that we were going to pull out. Not only did we announce it, but in phase one, let's just call this a three-phased approach based on timeline. 30 days in, phase one, 60 days in, phase two, and 90 days in with D-Day at the end of that 90 days, phase three. Here's what we did wrong. In phase one, we disconnected all of our assets and all of the capability of the Afghans to be able to fight for themselves and for us to be covered with support by fire and close air support on the ground. Now, does that make any tactical sense? A private and ranger regiment could have told you this on a whiteboard. A private in the 82nd Airborne Division could have told you this on a sand table. So if in phase one, which is what happened, we decide we're not going to offer any more close air support, which is what we did. So we said, we're not going to offer any more close air support. We're pulling the plug. And then you're not going to have any air sets on the ground. Not only can the Afghans not fight and fend for themselves, but neither can we when we're breaking contact and we're pulling all of our people out. So what happens? You get a catastrophe taking place in the airfield in Kabul. Mind blown. Look, I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but this is not a failure of strategic military organizations at the tactical level. This is a failure of leadership from the highest echelons. The incompetence of doing this at that level is mind-blowing. It's also nauseating. You know why? Because right now, you have a terrorist safe haven. And I can't imagine, because I work for the Central Intelligence Agency, I can't imagine they're too happy about this. So what does this mean, guys? This means we're going to be dealing with incompetence for the next 3 years, at least. You're talking about mask mandates being reintroduced. You're talking about vaccine cards being reintroduced. I don't want to make this political, but I know dumb. I know incompetence. I know stupid when I see it. And what scares the hell out of me, as the most powerful country on the planet, you have the Chinese teamed up with the Taliban, funding mining sources and factories all over Afghanistan. Who's getting richer? The terrorist. The Taliban isn't a political organization. The Taliban is a terrorist organization. And you're talking about the Chinese now affiliated with the Russians, pumping money into the Taliban, where you have no eyes, no ears on the ground in Afghanistan. And the only victims will be the people of Afghanistan who are getting pillaged via Sharia law, where we've made 20 years of traction in giving women a right, giving women the ability to go back to school, and some semblance of sovereignty and security in that country. But also, you're looking at an international terrorist safe haven where you have partners that are Chinese, that are Russian, and that are Taliban building their capability and capacity to destroy our country. Do you think they woke up 3 days ago when they infiltrated Kabul and said, you know, we're going to live our best life here. You know, we don't have to worry about the infidel. Let's just do what we do. What they do, I thought it was amazing, the pictures and the videos of the Taliban coming out of the hinterlands. You're talking about a people who have been fighting for 20 years. I took breaks. I did 4.5 years of combat over the last decade and a half. The Taliban, they don't take breaks. They go into their caves, they're going to their safe havens, and they fight war for 20 years. What do you think is going to happen in the veteran transitional process of the Taliban trying to become politicians? Not so much. They're going to rape, pillage, and destroy the sovereignty, the security of Afghanistan, the 20 years that we worked so hard. And now what do we have? We have the Green Mountains of Libya. We have Iran. We have North Korea. We have a international terrorist safe haven that is going to bite us in the ass. 19 terrorists with the willingness and motivation to attack us with box cutters, people, with box cutters, took down 4 airplanes and killed over 3,000 people that launched us in the global war on terror that killed so much more. So what are we doing? What we're doing is putting ourselves at grave risk, and it scares the crap out of me. It really does. And I hate to be so passionate about this because I don't want to work you up, but I am so, like, I rarely have anxiety about our future because I know our liberty and freedom is in our hands. It's not in the government's hands. I'm not anti-government because I want the government to succeed because it's a representation of the American people. But the blinders are on, people. The blinders are on. So what does that mean for your future? It means you need to stay woke. Yep, you need to wake up. You need to be better prepared. And you need to start focusing on self-reliance. This is not a Philcraft pitch. This is a Mike Glover who understands how this all works. When you are wearing masks years from now, when you're like Australia, where a police officer in Australia gave a serious, like completely serious press conference, by the way, of going into people's homes, thousands of people's homes that are being tracked on their cell phones, where he said seriously, yes, we pulled this guy out of his house and we gave him a warning and we gave him a ticket because he said he wanted to go outside and we caught him outside trying to get fresh air. And we don't need any of that. What? How is there not a civil war right now in Australia? When the police are telling you that you can't leave your home to get fresh air in your front yard, good luck with that doing that in America. Because there's few things in this world that I'm willing to go to war for. My liberty, my individual liberty and freedom for which I fought for as a service member of the armed forces, that's one of them. You tell me you're going to track me and I can't leave my home? Good luck with that. Good luck with that. I'm not anti-government, but I will be very anti-government. The best thing that we have going in our country is the decentralization of our states and the fact that some states right now are seeking their own sovereignty from the federal government. And good for them. Those are the states like Texas, like Utah, like Montana. Those are the states that I'm going to live in. Because the federal government will not tell me as an individual how to live my life. They won't tell me how to raise my children. They won't tell me what things I need to put in my body. I'm not even an anti-vaxxer. When I was in the military, if I needed to get vaccinated to go to war to defend my country, so be it. I got the anthrax series. I didn't want to get anthrax put in my body, but I've had COVID. I don't need a booster because I have good immunity. I got through COVID fine. My entire family and most of my company did. Why? Because I'm not morbidly obese. I'm healthy. And I'll depend on natural biological means of maintaining my immunity. I'm not going to wear a mask out in public. You know why? Because I don't want to shield and suppress my immunity. I take vitamin D, I work out, I get good sleep, and I take care of myself. So I'm willing to take the chances on a rate that is less than anything else we face in our life. Every 36 seconds in this country, somebody dies from cardiovascular disease. Think about that. Hundreds of thousands of people who stroke out, have heart attacks, have some cardiovascular issue, including cancer, via all of the unhealthy habits that we're living. But are you going after them? I see McDonald's and Burger King down the road are open. I see morbidly obese people all across the country. What are we doing about that dilemma? I see the commercials selling sugar and fatty foods to our kids. What are we doing about that? The answer, nothing. But you want to regulate me as a grown-ass adult? I don't think so. So if this is going to compound itself and get worse and worse and worse over time, what are we going to do about it? You better get off your ass. You better start focusing your attention on being self-reliant. Cut the umbilical cord from the reliance you have on all the infrastructure, especially the federal government. If you're getting paid by them, stop getting paid. Unscrew your finances right now. That's the best thing that you could do for yourself right this second. What do you have that you could sell, that you could reallocate your resources in something sustainable? Food, growing your own food, chickens, buying that land, having renewable resources of energy, water, food, all of that good stuff in homesteading is what you could do right here, right now. Guys, I hate this idea of this social dependence. Why do you think this social democratic independence on the epicenters and votes and political policy that affects everybody in all these states, why do you think it has to do with the epicenter? because that is where all the dependence is. That's where the umbilical cord is embedded. That's where the tit is, and you won't get off of it. So we stack people in these epicenters in LA and New York City and Atlanta, Georgia. And what is it doing good for our country? One, it's assimilating a vote that's outpacing the rural populations of people taking care of themselves. And that's to a detriment. That's a problem for me, because now we're voting for policies that are making us less reliable on ourselves and more dependent. And it's becoming so vastly decentralized and convoluted that we don't see what's happening in these epicenters. More crime, up 16%. Murder, up 16% as a whole across every major metropolitan area. Some places spiking 20, 30% and up. Homelessness. Have you visited San Jose, Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York City lately? It is an epidemic. The COVID-19 virus is not the systemic epidemic issue. Homelessness and crime is. Why? Because of the policy. All of those people, because they can't think for themselves, they can't act for themselves, are becoming more socially dependent. And when their vote counts, it counts because they're trying to keep themselves alive. They want the check to come in. They want the welfare to come in. And they don't want to take care of themselves. So what do we need to do? We need to segue as much as possible away from that dependence. We focus on three pillars of preparedness in the pillars. It's yourself. It's your mobility platform, which means your means of transportation and your homestead. The long-term survivability of how you bed down for the long haul. It's not that hard. It's not hard to get started. Go on Philcraft Survival's pages. This isn't even a paid advertisement because we offer more free than anything we propose that's paid. The podcast, the YouTube, start building your dependence now. I am scared for this country over the next 3 years based on what I'm seeing right now. It scares the crap out of me. Here's what I want. I want leaders. I want thought leaders, whatever the hell that means. I want people who write books on leadership to stand up and lead this country. I talked to Tim Kennedy about this recently. How can we convince all these special operations guys, including myself, to raise up? Here's what I know. I run for Congress in my state. I wouldn't win. Why? Because these political losers who have been sucking the system dry, who have been working under the government for 40 plus years, have the backing of the lobbyists, of all these people who are pumping millions of dollars into their campaign. That's why they're winning the vote. How do I win? Well, we need a campaign. If you're a billionaire, you're a millionaire, and you want to support me, and you can guarantee me the money to allow me to support that campaign, I'd run right now. But what I want to see is these leaders that are doing so well in their own communities, who are talking about it, like myself on podcast, who are driving people to think outside the box. That's what I want. Because I want us as a country to start leading ourselves again from strength. We're not leading this country from a position of strength. We're leading this country from a position of weakness, and that's not going to fly. Guys, current events, I'm pumped up. I got 300 milligrams of caffeine in me. Rich Mocha, I'm shaking. I'm going to have anal leakage. Sorry, too much information. But I wanted to put that information out there because I want to get you to think, and I want you to get off your ass. If you're being lazy, if you're not paying attention to how this country is going, then you're wrong. This isn't fear-mongering. This is fact-mongering. I want you to be understanding through thoughts, through philosophy, through ideas, but I want you to translate all of that information and do something for yourself, your family, and your community. Till next time, guys. Peace.